Hi, it's Charlie Connolly here. I write every week in the New European on books and literature and great European lives. If you'd like to enjoy more from the New European, you can join us by subscribing at theneweuropean.co.uk/subscribe. That's theneweuropean.co.uk/subscribe. Great European Lives. From the New European. Victor Tsoi, 21st of June 1962 to the 15th of August 1990. During an interview he gave in November 2012, Mikhail Gorbachev recalled the moment in 1985 when, on the death of his predecessor, Konstantin Chernenko, he became leader of the Soviet Union. The cardiologist telephoned me and said, "Mikhail Sergeyevich, Konstantin Ustinovich has passed away." The first thing I did was appoint a Politburo and convene a meeting, at which I turned to the Foreign Minister Gromyko and said things needed to be done differently. "Tsoi is singing We Want Changes in concerts," I said, "and people are saying openly and directly, we want changes." Konstantin Chernenko died on the 10th of March 1985. Victor Tsoi's song, Hachu Peremen, We Want Changes, was first performed in public by his band Kino during the summer of 1986. So profound was the song's influence on perestroika-era Russia, so deeply did it resound in the hearts of the Russian people, even the man who devised perestroika found himself projecting Tsoi's lyrics onto his own recollected experience. With its urgent drum beat and sub-rockabilly riffs beneath Tsoi's impassioned call for change, Hachu Peremen remains an anthem for the dispossessed across the former Soviet Union. During the attempted Russian coup in 1991, the song blasted out of speakers at the barricades. 2 years later, it was playing during the constitutional crisis that saw Boris Yeltsin attempting to disband the Supreme Soviet. In Belarus in 2011, it was the soundtrack to protests against the autocratic president Alexander Lukashenko. And 3 years after that, it thundered out during the Euromaidan demonstrations in Ukraine. Yet Victor Tsoi, the charismatic lead singer of Kino and the composer of Hachu Peremen, never saw it as an overtly political song. As his friend and bandmate Alexei Rubin explained after Tsoi's death, the changes Victor was singing about were not simply changes to the political system. He was singing about a more profound kind of change. Change within the person. 30 years after his death at the age of 28, Victor Tsoi remains a huge figure in the former USSR. There's a museum dedicated to him in the St. Petersburg boiler room where he worked, while a wall off Arbat Street in the historic centre of Moscow remains covered in ever-changing tributes to the singer. In 2018, researchers at the University of Tumen in Siberia discovered a new species of oribatid mite on the forest floors of Malaysia. They named it Trachioribates Victor Tsoi. Tsoi never knew the material trappings of rock star life showered on his equivalents in the West. It was only in his last couple of years, when Gorbachev's reforms allowed artists like Tsoi out of the cultural shadows, that he could even appreciate the widespread nature of his fame. Having spent most of his career playing illicit gigs in small venues and house parties, in June 1990, Tsoi led Kino onto the stage in front of 62,000 people at the Luzhniki Stadium in Moscow, closing the show with a joyous sing-along rendition of Hachu Peremen that tore the roof off the place. Even then he lived modestly with none of the hedonistic excess you might expect from an icon of disaffected youth. Even his early death wasn't quite in the rock and roll tradition. Less than 2 months after that triumphant show at the Luzhniki, Tsoi was driving back from a fishing trip in Latvia in his boxy, noisy, five-door Muscovich Aleko, when it crossed the central reservation and ploughed headlong into a bus coming in the other direction. He was killed instantly. There were no drugs or alcohol in his system. He just nodded off at the wheel. You didn't get into rock and roll in the Soviet Union to get rich. If bland, state-approved pop based on old Russian folk songs wasn't your thing, you tended to gravitate towards the underground scene where albums were recorded in apartments on rudimentary tape recorders and a few copies made to be passed around samizdat style. Listen, enjoy, pass it on. Gigs were low-key, often no more than informal jams in someone's apartment. Organised tours and festivals were the stuff of fantasy. Albums would sometimes be smuggled in from abroad and mined for influences, glimpses of a far-off youth culture that seemed to come from another planet. The rare gigs and parties were welcome breaks from the ordinary. Even at his creative peak in the mid-1980s, Tsui had to fit Kino around his job as a boiler engineer in an apartment block. When he sang of the hopes, dreams and travails of the working Russian, he knew exactly what he was talking about. Tsui's songs resonated because they were rinsed with the authenticity of experience. Tsui means more to the young people of our nation than any politician, celebrity or writer, said Komsomolskaya Pravda, the newspaper of the Soviet Communist Party youth movement, when it broke the news of his death. This is because Tsui never lied, never sold out. He was born in Leningrad to Valentina, a PE teacher, and Robert Tsui, an engineer whose family came from what's now North Korea. After a checkered schooling in which he excelled at art but was expelled from his college, he studied wood carving and wrote songs. By the turn of the 1980s, Tsui was on the fringes of Leningrad's underground rock scene, playing bass for a band called Palata Shest, and forming the close friendship with Alexander Rubin from the band Pilgrimy that would later lay the foundations of Kino, the greatest rock band in the history of the USSR. The pair first collaborated as members of the punk outfit Avtomatichesky Udovletvoriteli, whose riotous gigs attracted the attention of Boris Grebenshikov. Grebenshikov, leader of the pioneering band Aquarium, is still widely regarded as the father of Soviet rock and roll, and his patronage was a boost to many artists on the unofficial Soviet scene. Even amid the howling racket made by Avtomatichesky Udovletvoriteli, Grebenshnikov could hear the quality of Tsui's songwriting and took him under his wing, providing advice, encouragement, and even members of his own band for live shows. In the summer of 1981, Tsui and Rubin were gigging as Garin I Gipoboloidi with drummer Oleg Valinsky. The new outfit was admitted to the prestigious Leningrad Rock Club, an establishment connected to Grebenshikov that was semi-tolerated by officialdom, but whose gigs were riddled with the KGB. When Valinsky was conscripted into the army, the remaining duo became Kino, the Russian word for cinema. It was, thought Tsui, easy to remember, easy to pronounce, and would look big on the posters. Tsui was writing constantly and before long had enough material for the band's debut album, 1982's Saurok Pyat, 45, named because it was 45 minutes long, just enough to fill one side of a cassette tape. With the help of Grebenshnikov, who loaned members of Aquarium for the recording, on Saurok Pyat, Tsui demonstrated his willingness to tackle political issues, albeit in a necessarily oblique and veiled manner. In Elektrichka, for example, named after the commuter chuggers that served Russia's big cities, Tsui describes a man sitting on a train that's taking him somewhere he doesn't want to go, but he's no choice other than to stay on board. Four more albums followed in 4 years, each increasing the band's reputation across the Soviet Union. But it was their 1988 album Grupa Kruvi, Blood Group, that would establish Kino as Russia's leading band, and Tsui as the voice of a generation. The album coincided with Gorbachev's reforms, allowing Tsui to be more overt in the lyrics he was writing. The title track, for example, was critical of the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan, but sympathised with the plight of conscripts sent to the region. By then, the charismatic frontman was also a film star. In the final scene of Sergei Solovyov's 1987 cult thriller Assa, Tsoi is slumped in a chair, while a restaurant manager reads out a long list of regulations by which Tsoi's band have to abide in order to play for the diners. She's still in full bureaucratic flow when he stands up, walks out, and heads for the dining room, shot from behind with his familiar thatch of dark hair and long black coat. The other members of Kino are on stage, playing the introduction to Hachu Peremen, and Tsoi climbs onto the stage and begins to sing. Eyes screwed shut, whole body tense as he wrings every ounce of authenticity from his slight frame. The camera moves around behind him to reveal not an expanse of empty tables and chairs, but a huge, packed crowd, holding up cigarette lighters and singing along, calling for the coming changes the man who inspired them would not live to see. Great European Lives is brought to you by The New European. It's written and presented by Charlie Connolly, and the series producer is Steve Anglesey.